From WXXI News, this is Education Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the spring of 2013, when a woman named Amy Bluell was looking for a way to honor her late father, whom she lost to suicide in 2003. Bluell chose the image of a semicolon, a symbol for those dealing with depression or mental health challenges. She launched Project Semicolon, and here's what it says on the project's website. Quote, "A semicolon is used when an author could have chosen to end their sentence, but chose not to. The author is you, and the sentence is your life." In the past 2 years, the semicolon symbol has spread far beyond what Amy Bluell could have imagined. You might see someone with a semicolon tattoo. You might see the symbol as a Facebook status or a profile picture. And now you're getting a sense for what it means. Bluell's organization is a faith-based effort, but the semicolon symbol has become a kind of image for anyone who is persevering. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in this country, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In this hour, we're going to talk about suicide prevention, the meaning of the semicolon, and more. My guest in studio is Shai Lewis, 211 Lifeline Community Engagement Manager, which is a program of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. Shai, it's great to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me back. I'm pleased to be here.
You first saw that semicolon symbol when?
Probably 2 or 3 years ago was the first time that we saw it hitting social media, and it really took off. It captured people's imaginations, and it was a real message of hope for people who have struggled with thoughts of suicide or had mental health challenges, dealt with depression. The idea that this doesn't have to be the end of the sentence, that there's a continuation and that there's more to my story. It's such a hopeful message.
I like it. I really do. And, you know, we look at Amy Bluell, who launched Project Semicolon. She didn't create the semicolon symbol for this reason. She thought maybe this would attract a little attention. And now, 2 years later, it's become kind of, whether it's faith-based or secular, whoever you are, it's become a symbol for kind of anyone who wants to send a message.
It's really been adopted, and you see the cycles of social media. It hit big a couple years ago, and people were paying attention to it, and then it kind of lulled off, and it's captured attention again in the last 2 to 3 weeks. It's been all over different social media outlets, and People Magazine has picked it up, and HuffPost has picked it up, and it's just kind of really been in people's minds, and it's grown probably so far. I don't know Amy Bluell, and we're not affiliated with her in any way, but it really seems that it's become a symbol that people are adopting, but both within her project semicolon and outside, just as a message and a symbol that helps people to feel positively about their mental health and to feel positively about surviving difficult times and overcoming challenges. And so we're 100% for that messaging out in the community and for people really thinking about themselves as survivors and people with more story to tell.
Listeners, I'd love to hear from you if you decide that you want to share some of your story or maybe someone you care about. And I know, and Shai and I were talking about this before the program started. I know that this can be sensitive. So I don't want to push anyone to talk about this if they don't want to. But if you want to share your story and talk about it, maybe you have a semicolon tattoo or maybe it is a part of your life. And we'd love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. That's toll free. Or 263-WXXI right here in Rochester. 263-9994. You can tweet at the program at Evan Dawson on Twitter, and we'll read some of your emails and comments that have already come in this morning via email. But to me, Shai, I view it. I did not know what it meant until a couple of days ago, and I've seen it. You know, I've seen it on Facebook. I've seen friends post it, etc. So it looks cool. First of all, it's a great looking just a little symbol, but when you talk to young people, is this about not just saying, hey, I'm going to persevere, but it's almost a reminder to yourself? What have people been telling you?
Sure. When we've talked to different people about it, the idea that it is sort of a self-reminder, both of a challenge overcome and of a reason to stay alive, a reason to keep fighting. So to think about what you've already overcome at that point that you decided to get that tattoo. And some people don't get a tattoo. Some people will draw the symbol on their wrist with like a permanent marker or other ways to sort of display. If you're not a tattoo person, but you want to kind of support this messaging or think about it for yourself, you could do that with a permanent marker like a Sharpie and take a photo of it. But those kinds of messages and anything that you can do, whether it's a semicolon, a journal, any kind of artistic endeavor that you can do to support your own recovery from difficult times, remind yourself of successfully overcoming challenges, can and help you to overcome the next challenge. Because life is full of challenges. There'll always be difficult times. There'll always be difficult things to overcome. And for some people, that tattoo or that other kind of artistic thing that they've done for themselves is a great way to reflect and remind that you can overcome another challenge.
If this is new to you, as it was new to me just a couple of days ago, but you know, or you've got a story to share or something that you want, maybe you want to ask Shia Lewis about, or maybe just sort of a message of hope, and you want to talk about suicide prevention, you can also call the program. It doesn't have to be about a semicolon and that kind of the project, that movement. But if you want to talk mental well-being and suicide prevention, we'd love to hear from you as well. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Shia, I want to expand on an important point that you just made, which is that there are many people who will go through life and have a challenge and maybe be a survivor of a suicide attempt.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that everything will be great for every day for the rest of your life. Or let's say you thought about suicide, you did not
act on those thoughts.
Yes, you did not act on those thoughts. And I was almost going to use the word commit. Tell me again the language that we prefer on suicide.
When we're talking about suicide, we don't want to use the word commit because it sort of criminalizes it. It's
right.
Like we say that commit a crime. What we want to talk about is people who have died by suicide, people who have thoughts of suicide, people who have attempted suicide.
Completed suicide?
So completed suicide.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just want to make sure we're using the right terms here. But let's say someone has thought about it, did not complete suicide, did not attempt but thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a danger in thinking, well, good, now we can move on and everything's better. To me, the semicolon seems to indicate, okay, there's more to be said here, but it doesn't mean that every day is going to be easy. It doesn't mean that every moment is going to be easy, and it doesn't mean that those thoughts might not come back. How often might they come back? I guess every person is different.
You're absolutely right. Every person is different. The challenges that we face are different. There's a lot of factors that go into having thoughts of suicide or mental health struggles that are related to your body chemistry and genetics, but also related to situational factors and things that are going on in your life. So we never know when that intersection or that exact grouping of circumstances is going to come together to have somebody have thoughts of suicide. But we know things to look for: feelings of hopelessness, feelings of helplessness, major losses, and feeling like you can't change it. That sense of pain that you need to escape from and you can't think of another way to escape from is when thoughts of suicide start to be more prevalent. When people overcome those, and sometimes people live with those thoughts of suicide every day and never make the choice to make an attempt, never attempt to end their life. And those people are struggling every day, and that semicolon or another reminder, a way to think about it, that's a real success. It's a struggle to live with those thoughts of suicide, but it's a real success every day to choose life. To choose to try another day, to choose a different strategy, to choose a different way of interacting. And as you choose those, maybe the thoughts of suicide will wane. For many people, they do. And as those thoughts of suicide wane, you're going to encounter other challenges in your life at another time. Maybe there's seasonal depression that happens, seasonal affective disorder, or other kinds of cyclical changes in your body chemistry. You feel depressed again. You know, that something to hang on to as a reminder that you overcame those dark times, those difficult times, and that you could probably do that again with some help, with some assistance. You could reach out to a crisis line like ours. You could reach out to friends or family. Lots of things that you can do, and we'll probably talk strategies later, but those things are really important to remember as you're dealing with new times, because we all deal with challenges continually. And when you successfully overcome a challenge, doesn't mean that there won't be another one down the road.
This morning I was talking to a friend who had also never heard of Project Semicolon until I brought it up this morning. And he said, what does it mean? And I explained. And he, I think in a very well-intended way, said, I would be concerned about someone getting a tattoo of a semicolon, because wouldn't that keep the idea of suicide on their mind every day? And to me, that called to mind the question of, if you think someone is thinking about suicide and you bring it up, are you putting a thought in their mind? And you have talked to us in the past about this, but I think it's important to revisit that territory here.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to talk about it, because talking about suicide is what is going to help address the public health problem that is suicide. We have to talk about it with each other, try to be honest, try to be open. If you are concerned about a person, they're exhibiting some potential warning signs, some things that make you nervous, that they're feeling depressed or that they are perhaps having thoughts of suicide, the best way to find out is to ask the question. And you do not plant the thought in somebody's head. There have been lots of studies and information out there that show that it's not true. You're not going to plant the idea in somebody's head. They're probably already thinking of it. Maybe they've thought of it and dismissed it as an option. Or if they are thinking of it, the best way to find out and to offer resources and help is to ask the question. People are nervous sometimes to ask the question because they're afraid, well, what if they say yes? I don't know what to do.
Yep.
And there are some really simple things that you can do. And the first one is just listen and don't judge. Hear what the person's story is. Hear why they want to die by suicide. Hear why they think that their pain is so great. What's been going on? And listen. Don't try to solve it. Don't try to fix it. Don't try to tell them right away. Don't try to tell them all the reasons that they have to live. Listen to their pain. By telling about your pain, it helps to process it. And by getting that semicolon tattoo or something else as you've processed your pain and moved on, you're reminded of that success of opening up, talking to somebody, or doing something on your own, maybe seeing a therapist, maybe calling a crisis line to help you overcome. And so if you see somebody with a tattoo, they probably are open to talking about it if you talk about it in a sensitive way. So if you introduce, you see somebody with one of those tattoos or has the marker on themselves or has it as their Facebook profile picture, probably you don't want to open up a conversation going, hey, did you try to kill yourself? But more like, hey, I see you have a semicolon tattoo. I was just reading about that. That must mean a lot to you. Do you want to talk about it?
Or how about just, that is an awesome tattoo.
Right. You know? They look really cool. They're very simple and stylized. It's a cool symbol.
Absolutely. And I think I would just say to someone, that is an awesome tattoo. And if you ever want to talk about it, you know, I'd love to hear more.
Yeah.
I admire it. We're talking to Shai Lewis, who's 211 Lifeline Community Engagement Manager, which is a program of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. How many times a week or a month are you talking to someone who is thinking about suicide?
Every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Through your job, sure.
Every day through our job. So at the crisis line at 211 Lifeline, we are talking to people who are having thoughts of suicide every day or struggling with thoughts of suicide. We're also talking to people who have mental health concerns. They're dealing with depression, loneliness, pain, all those other kinds of things every day, and hoping to help them process the pain, helping to generate ideas about coping skills and things that people can do so that they don't have thoughts of suicide. So in addition to talking to people with thoughts of suicide, we're also trying to help people, you know, who are farther up the river, so to speak, who aren't already thinking about suicide, to being able to process difficult emotions, difficult situations before thoughts of suicide happen.
I want to ask a question from a listener who sends this note. Does it do a disservice to say someone killed himself or herself because of one particular reason? For example, bullying. We often hear reports of people dying by suicide because they were bullied. Does that hide the complexities of suicide and the various factors that usually go into it?
That's a really complicated question, because the writer is correct. There's almost always more factors. We haven't had any research done directly saying that bullying causes suicide, but we know anecdotally that there's also a problem with people being bullied and dying by suicide later. Not everyone who is bullied dies by suicide, but certainly people who are bullied, that is the last thing that we can look at that was a challenge in their life that prior to a suicide. So we have both issues where we want to draw attention to bullying and that bullying can be a trigger or a factor or correlated to the suicide, but we also don't want to dismiss all the other factors that might be there for that person versus another person who was bullied who didn't die by suicide. So I don't know if it's a disservice, but certainly it oversimplifies the issue. When drawing attention to bullying, that's a good thing. When drawing attention to suicide, it can be simple, if that makes sense.
Here's a comment from a listener. This is amazing. I had never heard of the semicolon movement, but I am going to go get one. And tell your listeners, ask someone to talk about what is bothering them. That happened for me, and it saved my life. Sure.
Yeah, you never know. You don't know who's thinking about suicide. Sometimes people give very clear invitations. They maybe talk about suicide. They talk about wanting to die. They're giving, you can see physical symptoms of something wrong with a person. But other people, their invitations to talk aren't so clear. So just remembering every person that you interact with could be going through some struggle that you don't know about. And when you ask, how are you, really mean it, really be interested, because you don't know what someone's struggling with. And just saying hello to somebody could save a life. Talking to somebody about how you're doing and then really listening could save someone's life. So I think that's really important that we always remember in our interactions with people that there's private struggles that we don't know about, and to always be as nice and kind as we can, and to really reach out to the people that we care about or that we notice might be going through a hard time. Ask the question. If you are uncomfortable or it's not appropriate for you to reach out to that person, but you're concerned, offer them connections to other resources. There's our crisis line for local listeners, which is easy to dial, dial 211. There you go. There's also the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which in this region rings to us. But if you have a friend across the country, relatives, people you care about nationally, that's 1-800-273-TALK, 8255, just like your number, 1-800-273-TALK. And that will ring locally to us. But if you have a relative or friend across the country, it'll ring to one of 160 different crisis centers that are part of a national network.
You said earlier that one thing you don't want to do is tell someone, oh, you've got so much to live for. What are you talking about? And that is a very well-intended kind of a comment. Mm-hmm. What are the common things that we might say that are well-intended that are not helpful when someone says, yes, I'm thinking of suicide?
Things that are judgmental, you know, things that sort of minimize the problem, especially with young people. A lot of well-meaning adults that they might reach out to might try to minimize the problem. You're so young, you'll get over it. You have all the time in the world. You know, when sometimes there's difficult breakups and things like that, and somebody might be thinking about suicide, we might dismiss it and say there's other fish in the sea. You have all, you know, you're going to meet somebody else, those types of statements. That kind of dismissiveness and minimizing of the problem can be very hurtful. If a person's thinking about suicide, they're thinking about suicide. Whether or not you think they should be or not doesn't matter. So those kinds of judgmental statements can be very hurtful to the conversation. It's more about listening. It's about hearing the person's pain, acknowledging the person's pain, even acknowledging that they have reasons why they want to die by suicide. And as you talk about that with the person, if you're really interested and genuine in hearing the person's pain, most of the time they're going to uncover their own reasons for living. They're going to find a but. You're going to hear, but I really would like to see, I'd really like to go to college, or I'd really like to get married, or I'd really like to have children, or but what about my pets? But what about this? You might hear that but by really listening, which is so much more powerful than if you listed off all those things. You can't kill yourself. What about your children? What about your future? What about your pets? It's just much more powerful for the person to sort of discover that on their own, and then you can reinforce it with, well, then if it's not so much that you want to die, it's more that you need this pain to end. Let's talk about some ways that we can lessen this pain for you. We can maybe get you connected to some resources. We can maybe give you some strategies. We can maybe talk about some things. And if you don't know those things, you can call somebody who does, because there are those resources out there.
I asked you earlier how often you're talking to people who are thinking of suicide, obviously for your job. Mm-hmm. It's every day. One of the reasons I wanted to ask that is just to remind our audience that you are not alone. This is not uncommon if you feel this way. Mm-hmm. And there are people like Shai out there who can help you. But we've been talking about what maybe we shouldn't say. What's the first thing you do like to say when someone gets on the phone with you and is honest with you and is telling you, I'm thinking about this?
Right. So if they come right out and yeah, say at the beginning of the call that they're thinking about suicide, we'll probably tell them that we're glad that they felt comfortable to share that. Thank you. That's hard to share, and we're so glad that you did. Let's talk about what's got you feeling that way. Tell me more about what led you to thoughts of suicide.
And we would say, just open it up.
Open it up. Let's talk about it. And for each person, what led to those thoughts of suicide are so varied. It's hard to give any specifics after that, but in every case, we're going to be trying to listen. So hear that story. We're going to be trying to assess coping skills. What is it that you're already trying? What is it that you're good at? What are your strengths? Who's your support network? Do you not have a support network? Because some people don't. We're going to try to help you figure out how you can build one, maybe one person at a time that you can trust and talk to about this. We're going to be looking at maybe triggers, things that trigger those thoughts of suicide, and how to avoid those triggers and how to lessen those triggers. We're going to be talking about distraction techniques. You can't simply distract yourself as the only technique, but certainly distracting yourself from thoughts of suicide can be a way to move past that immediate impulse to act on the thoughts of suicide.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Shai Lewis, 211 Lifeline Community Engagement Manager, which is a program of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. And we're talking about suicide prevention, especially in light of what we've been seeing so often lately, which is a semicolon. The semicolon movement, in a way, has become a kind of symbol for people who have been dealing with their own sometimes mental health challenges, sometimes depression, thoughts of suicide, and their decision to say, I'm not putting a period at the end of the sentence of my life. I'm putting a semicolon, and there's more to say, and there's more to my life to come. And it's become a symbol of the movement. And I want to read an email from Ella. Ella writes the following. I have a semicolon tattoo, and it means everything to me. I just wanted to share that I'm probably the least likely person you would think would consider suicide. I have a good job. I have a great family. I have a loving husband. Please don't assume. Let people know that depression doesn't discriminate. Shai.
That is a wonderful sentence, because depression is equal opportunity. Depression can hit men, women, children, all ethnicities across the board. Having a lot of money doesn't keep you safe from depression or thoughts of suicide. Being poor doesn't mean you're more likely to have thoughts of suicide or deal with a mental health challenge. Mental illness is pretty much equal opportunity. So I think that's really important that she brought that out. And I'm so grateful to Ella for sharing that part of the story, because you can't assume from somebody's appearance or background or job what inner struggle they might be dealing with. The only way to know is to ask and to really be interested and talk to people, especially if you see some of those signs, those invitations that we like to call them, that maybe somebody wants to talk about something difficult in their life. Be alert for that and accept it, you know, because every day we ask, how are you? What's going on?
Yeah.
And we don't often really listen to the answer, or sometimes it's a reason, you know, we ask the question because we have something we want to tell about our day. So really listen to each other. The people, we take a lot of instant messages. We do an online chat service, both locally through our 211lifeline.org website and also through the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline portal. So we take chats, instant messages from people who maybe would never pick up the phone to call, but they're more comfortable on the computer. And they're sitting right next to their spouse or right next to one of their loved ones or in the same room on the computer, pouring out their heart and their pain to us while not feeling safe or comfortable or brave enough to start that conversation with a loved one. But the loved one probably has seen something. And if you are that loved one, if you're worried that someone you care about is in pain, start a conversation. I'm worried because you said X, and I'm wondering what that means. And start that conversation and see if you can offer help and offer connections to coping skills, to just being there. Sometimes just being there is enough, but there's also ways to cope with negative feelings, things that you can do yourself that will help you to cope, as well as outside resources like mental health counseling, crisis lines, mobile crisis programs, all different kinds of things that could be of assistance to you if you're struggling.
Here's why I so much appreciate Ella's email. First of all, you're sharing your own story, and I think it can help others, but also it's reminding us that, yes, as Shai said, think about, especially when people are going through a job loss, relationship loss, there are vulnerable moments for anybody. But sometimes people are surprised to hear that a person like Ella, good job, good family, loving husband, how could you be depressed? What do you, I've heard people say, what do you have to be sad about? As if it's easy. And it's missing the point that, you know, I, for example, was born with a heart condition. I required heart surgery, was on medication for a while. Some people are born with different kinds of medical ailments, and some people have depression. And that's, to me, a medical ailment. This is not, hey, someone like Ella, what do you have to feel sad about? That's totally missing it.
And that's that judgmentalness that we talked about, that we'd like more people to avoid and to think before you say stuff like that. Because it is, well, you may be seeing all these positive things in her life and those things may be true. There are other things going on for people. And to judge why or whether a person has a right to feel sad or depressed doesn't help anyone, doesn't help the situation, doesn't make you feel better, definitely doesn't make them feel better, and doesn't help people to do what they need to do to deal with that challenge, to deal with the depression. And there are specific things. And it's really hard because depression is a big old liar. And it tells you a lot of really negative messages about yourself, tells you a lot of things that are hopeless and that you can't change a lot of things. And it's hard for that person, in spite of all the good things that might be going on in their life, to be able to deal with that. And sometimes there aren't other good things. Sometimes people who are dealing with depression don't have some of those good resources that Ella had. So it's equal opportunity when these things hit and when you're challenged by them. And the idea that we can face those challenges and overcome those challenges, sometimes on our own, sometimes with help. And there's tons of help and resources out there. Reach out for help and talk to somebody about what you're going through. And again, if you are worried about someone, talk to them about it. Tell them you're worried. Tell them why you're worried. And that's a really hard conversation for us to have. We're afraid we'll be seen as prying, or we'll be seen as nosy, or be seen as, you know, be wrong. You know what? If you're wrong, the thing that the person finds out about you is that you're a safe person to talk to if they ever are struggling in the future. You know, so that's a good message to send too. You're wrong, you can move on. No, you're not struggling with thoughts of suicide. You're doing okay. Great. If you ever are, I'm here for you. And that's what they've learned from that. So even if you're wrong, you haven't caused any harm. You've only set up a future coping skill in case there is trouble.
Sometimes you meet someone and you know that they are doing the job they were born to do. Shai Lewis, you're born to do this job. It is so easy to talk to you. I see why people are so comfortable doing it. And we're learning a lot this hour as we talk about suicide prevention. Shai is a 211 Lifeline Community Engagement Manager, a program of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. And I'm getting a lot of written comments. So I want to do this. I want to take a short break and come back. I'm going to get through as many of the questions and comments that we're getting online in various forms. And if you do decide you want to call the program and share your story or share a comment or question, you can do that too. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Your questions, comments, next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's the college class you wish you could have taken. This month, our series focuses on Finger Lakes Community College's Viticulture and Wine Technology class. So you want to be a winemaker. You want to learn about the science of viticulture and winemaking. We're going to find out how it works, what the students are learning, and hear from some student success stories. It's all coming up next hour on Education Friday.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Dream Factory of Rochester, working to fulfill dreams for critically and chronically ill children, hosting their 10th annual golf tournament Monday, July 20th at Lima Golf and Country Club. More at dreamfactoryrochester.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I see the phone ringing. We're going to get to your phone calls as well. Let me get a question or comment as well from Peter in Geneva. And Peter writes the following. Hello, I had a brother who committed suicide and have a daughter who threatens it often. She is struggling with bipolar depression, as seems to be in our gene pool. We need help and have had little from the mental health system at Clifton Springs Hospital. They've had trouble there. What to do?
Well, with that email, there's a lot that we don't know. So
sure.
What I would do is I would say, Peter, give us a call. Talk to us at the 211 Lifeline program. Dial 211. It should work from your region. And give us a ring. One of our specialists would be happy to talk through the challenges that you face with your family and figure out resources that would be appropriate to help. And you could talk more about the specific issues with the hospital, and maybe we could brainstorm some ways around that. I'm sorry for your struggle. I'm glad that your daughter is communicating her thoughts about suicide and that she's struggling with that. I think that's a really important thing that she's able to communicate that. It sounds like it's been a challenge for your family. We'd want to figure out what other resources might be available in addition to the hospital. Give us a call.
Peter, I hope that helps. 211. This is Heather in the city of Rochester. Go ahead, Heather.
Hey, so I have never actually heard about the Semicolon Project until today. And I think it's good that you're having this conversation because 5 years ago, I was in really bad depression. I wish someone would have, you know, come beside me and said, you know, it's okay, you're not stupid or whatever. But and I think it's good that you're bringing this up, that it's okay to talk about it.
It's so important to talk about it, Heather. So I'm glad that you called and were able to share that. And it is so important to talk to somebody about how you're feeling, and for all of us to work as a community on being more open to talking to people about difficult feelings, about depression, about anxiety, about thoughts of suicide. By bringing it out in the open, we can share our successes and challenges together. We can help each other figure out where to turn, what resources have helped us, and share those stories of success. May I ask, was there anything particular that helped you to deal with that depression 3 to 5 years ago?
Music was a big help because I felt like music knew me better than people because it wasn't saying, oh, you're okay, you know, you'll get over it, just, you know, move on. So music was a big part, and then finding people that actually wanted to talk about it and weren't judgmental or whatever was a big help.
I'm so glad you found those people. I'm so glad. That's wonderful.
So I've been 5 years clean of depression, and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to say there is hope at the end, and I know that sounds really cliche, but you know, you got to find those people that are going to be there for you and not be like, oh, get over it, you're fine.
Heather, I don't think that sounds cliche at all, and I think it sounds encouraging for anybody who's listening to this program, whether you've dealt with depression or know someone who does. So thank you, Heather. Thanks for calling. And I'm glad that you're feeling different these days, that you're feeling well. My concern, Shai, is that she is indicating there, you know, she's right. You've got to find people who will listen and are not judgmental. Yeah. Implied there is that was not easy to find at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all are in different groups of family and friends, but Heather's certainly not the only person who has maybe felt like, boy, people are just not listening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's troubling.
Yeah, and so many of us tend to feel that way in our personal lives. There's usually one or two people, if we work hard, that you can identify that you might be able to talk to about depression or mental health or thoughts of suicide. And if you're not sure who that is for you, call us. We'll talk it through. We'll brainstorm options. And if there really isn't anybody, we can be that person at the crisis line that is there to listen and to sort things through in a non-judgmental way. That can be really important, that connection, that talking about it. We can also help you connect. If it helps to talk about it, it might help to talk to a therapist. It might help to talk to a counselor. A lot of folks are nervous about that or fearful of that. Try it, because talking about your feelings, talking about what's going on with a trained professional can be super helpful. The same way that talking with non-judgmental friends are, and sort of finding that magical group of people or single person that you can really share with, that magic can happen through talk therapy, and that can be hugely effective at lowering depression. There's medications that are also helpful, but talk therapy and medication in combination is an even better way to approach difficult feelings, mental health concerns. Depression's treatable, so it's a huge public health problem, but it is also treatable, and there are really effective treatments out there. And you talked about it being a medical condition. It is, and there are treatments that can help and that are evidence-based and show that you can work through some of these tough things.
Before I get back to the phones, a quick point on the question of stigma and being willing to talk to somebody and willing to air out your feelings, whether it's a close friend or family or loved one, a therapist, somebody, a different kind of person. I think I've shared this story before, but this is one of my favorite comments on the question of therapy. I have a friend who he and his wife have this wonderful marriage. It's not perfect. What marriage is perfect? But we learned, I think, a couple of years ago that on occasion they go to therapy. And when people find out, they tend to say, oh, boy, I didn't know anything was wrong. And the answer tends to be, well, nothing's really wrong, but do you wait to have a cavity to brush your teeth? You know, why is there a stigma about wanting to go talk to somebody, mm-hmm. even if things are largely fine? You know, so, you know, even apart from depression, the question of being willing to talk to somebody, you know, don't feel like there's anything sort of abnormal or strange or odd about it.
Mm-hmm. How do you get a checkup? How do you take care of yourself? Yeah. And those things are very important. Now, there's also the difficulty in some folks that we talk to on the phone. There's an expense associated with treatment that can be a challenge for people. So if that's a challenge for you, give us a call. We'll try to talk through what the particular options might be for you, because I know that can be a barrier. But past the cost issue, the barrier is mostly just about fear and discrimination. People treat you differently when they find out sometimes that you have gone to mental health treatment, seen a therapist, talked to a counselor. There shouldn't be that stigma the same way. And I, for every person who talks, and I'm so glad that your friend told that story, because and talk to your friend group about that, because that normalizes talking to people, seeking help, getting a mental health checkup, sort of checking in on the health of your marriage or checking in on your own mental health. The more we normalize that and help people to realize and help our communities to change the way we talk about mental health, the better off and the better the rates of suicide, you know, will go down if we start to be able to talk about it. So we have to encourage that conversation. And that's, you know, when we first came together, the first time I was on the show to talk after Robin Williams passed, that was an important thing to think about. Is that the community started talking about it in a different way and about help seeking in a different way. And I'm hoping we're continuing on with that in our conversations about mental health. So I'm glad that the Semicolon Project caught your eye and that you thought to ask us to come back and talk.
Absolutely. We're talking to Shai Lewis, 211 Lifeline Community Engagement Manager, Program of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. And back to the phones in Rochester, this is Cindy. Go ahead, Cindy.
Hi. I originally thought I was going to just piggyback on something that you said earlier, Evan, but having not really listened to the conversation while I was getting on, I guess I'm piggybacking on what you are all talking about. So what I wanted to say was earlier, Evan, you talked about a predisposing condition, a medical condition, and that sometimes people, you know, are born with these conditions. So my comment was that I think that for the majority of the people who are diagnosed with, for instance, clinical depression, there is some kind of biological reason for that. And it often can be hereditary, and there are a lot of reasons why that can be. But I think that it's important that people start to realize that health is a continuum. And we, I hope, will expand our conversations about health to include that biopsychosocial, the biological, psychological, social nature of ourselves as human beings. And these conversations will come up, and we will not polarize the conversation of medical versus mental health, because we can have a medical condition that leads to a depressive episode. And then you would go and talk to somebody about it. So anyway, I'm just agreeing with what your guest is saying and with what you are saying. And my hope really is that we can destigmatize mental health so people will just access care for whatever their need is. And I'll listen to your comments off there. Thank you very much.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Shai.
Mm-hmm. No, Cindy, I love that you made that point and that you talked about and reinforced what we've been talking about, because mental health is health. So our health is mental health is part of that. It's all one thing. Our body mind is connected, obviously. But yet we still haven't necessarily made that leap in terms of thinking about suicide as a public health problem, and really talking about it in that way and putting funding into it. Suicide as an issue gets very little funding compared to other kinds of medical disorders that cause death, the 10th leading cause of death, and yet we're like the, I can't remember the chart that I recently saw, but if there were the 10th leading cause of death as suicide, so the funding levels associated with it are way lower in terms of what gets publicly funded, what kinds of efforts go into research. So there's lots of great research that's going on, but there's not enough, and there's not enough dollars to fund research. There's not enough dollars to fund outreach programs, but they are all connected. And so the more we talk about the fact that mental health is part of our overall health, it's part of the healthcare system, and that we need to think about reaching out to deal with mental health issues the same way that we would reach out to deal with diabetes or a heart condition or any of the other different kinds of problems. They're all related. And she was also right, and I'm glad that she mentioned about the idea that depression can come as a symptom, so of a medical problem. A lot of folks who've had a major surgery find themselves feeling depressed afterwards, and that's there's real a link to some of those kinds of concerns. And so a person who maybe hasn't struggled with mental health previously could, as a result of a health condition, be struggling with some mental health problems that are correlated with that particular medical problem that they've been having.
Do we overuse the word depressed, as in when people are feeling sad about something, they might say, I'm depressed, but is depressed a clinical condition that we should use very separately to talk about brain chemistry as opposed to feeling really sad?
I don't know. I don't think that we can talk about them, that we should try to separate them. Depressed is a word that means you're feeling sad, but yep. Depressed is also a diagnosis, a clinical diagnosis that has some very specific criteria to meet. I think for some people it's confusing, but I think if we continue to change the conversation and talk about mental health as a continuum, like and health as a continuum, like Cindy said, that will help us to think about putting these things in the right place, in the right context.
I've got a number of comments, at least three this hour, from people who have written in various forms about the question of whether we are over-medicating. And one of our listeners compared it to ADD or ADHD, saying, didn't we over-medicate for that? And is there a risk of over-medicating for depression? Shai, on this program, we were talking about young adult literature and talked to an author of a book who wrote a story of depression and suicide. Two teenagers fall in love. The girl fails to stop the boy from completing suicide. And maybe that's an uncharitable term, fails to stop. But the characters in that book were sort of maligning medication as if it dulls you down and strips away who you really are. And there were a lot of people who are uncomfortable with that. And our listeners today are sort of asking, are we over-medicating? How do you answer that?
First, a disclaimer, not a psychiatrist,
sure,
or qualified
absolutely.
To dispense or give medication
absolutely.
In any way. But as a person who works in the mental health field and talks to people of all different kinds of backgrounds around this, I certainly think that medication, one, we need to be open to it. Medication can be helpful, but it's most helpful when it's an adjunct to talk therapy. So if you're prescribed a medication, take the medication. If you're having trouble with the medication, talk to somebody about how the medication makes you feel. It shouldn't make you feel like you're other than yourself necessarily. Talk to your doctor about what you're feeling. And a lot of folks don't do enough of that kind of conversation. Who's prescribing this to you? Talk about the effects that it's having on you. Maybe that's not the right medication or the right dose. So sometimes it takes a while to find that. And while you're finding that, maybe you're having some difficult symptoms or some things that make you feel not so awesome about it, but you have to talk about it and continue to try until you find the right one. And again, it's most helpful as an adjunct to talk therapy. So if you're able to take medication but also be talking to somebody about what you're going through, talking about coping skills, talking about strategies, more people, in my opinion, should be doing talk therapy without medication than medication without talk therapy.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I'm not advocating against medication. I'm
absolutely.
Just saying more people should be doing the talk therapy piece and then bringing in medication as an adjunct to help you.
No question. I think that makes total sense to me. And I think of people in my own life and I think I understand the question about whether we ever medicate, but let's be careful not to stigmatize medication, which does wondrous things.
They're very effective.
Sometimes life-saving things.
Life-saving, life-changing, absolutely. So don't turn off medication, but consult with the people who are treating you. So go in for treatment. Talk to them. Talk to them about what you need. Talk to them about what you're experiencing. And a lot of times it takes a little bit of experimentation to get the right medication, the right dosage.
It's like, I mean, I've been dealing with migraines for years, and I have seen certain medications work and certain do not. And I remember having a doctor say to me a few years ago, well, there's a lot more than just Imitrex now. And if something isn't working for you, it doesn't mean you give up and you don't take anything. You have, sometimes there is an experimental period. You've got to find out what works and that there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, a migraine, dealing with brain chemistry myself and you know, trying to find what works doesn't mean you give up. So
migraines can be debilitating. Depression can be debilitating.
Absolutely.
So to seek help and to seek the kinds of help that are evidence-based and that are shown can make a difference is really important.
Okay, we're going to get back to the phones in just one second. I want to ask about statistics. I've always seen over the years the rate of male suicide completion is a lot higher than females. Is that still true?
Still true. 100% true. More males complete suicide, die by suicide, than women at like a rate of 4 to 1.
Wow.
However, more women attempt suicide and do not die than men at a similar rate.
So here's a stereotypical question. I don't know if I'm going down the wrong road, but when you talk about the impact of talk therapy, of actually talking it out. The stereotype about men is that men don't talk. We don't talk about our feelings. And again, that's a way overbroad generalization. But is there anything in the research that indicates if more males would be willing to talk about these things, and maybe a little bit of that stereotype plays into the completion rate? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. We talk, some of the messaging that's out there to men about talking about emotions and dealing with emotions is really negative towards that. You know, that whole bootstrap mentality, we don't talk about this. It's out there in various communities, but definitely in the male community. There's some good campaigns. If you Google man therapy, there's some good campaigns out there to try to help people to understand and feel more confident reaching out for help. So a lot of good prevention campaigns need to be aimed at the groups who complete suicide most often.
We're talking to, I'm sorry, Shai, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to talk about men, Native American, and First Nation people. So those are some of the communities. And there's lots of other LGBTQ that really need some specific outreach campaigns to get them the right resources to the right places as they have higher rates of completion.
We're talking to Shai Lewis, 211 Lifeline Community Engagement Manager. That's a program of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. And on the subject of medication in Canandaigua, this is Richard. Go ahead, Richard.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to address the issue of the relationship between the ideational and the physiological and where medication plays in. Since childhood, I had OCD, and I worked for years on it, you know, with talk therapy. And then one day the pharmaceutical industry invented the drugs that would address that specific condition. And 20 minutes after I took the first pill, it was like a miracle occurred. And what I was able then to do was to review my talk therapy and fix crazy things that I had tried to do to get rid of the physical discomfort. On the basis of just purely ideational technique or attempts, you know, in mm-hmm. terms of my thought. So I was able to clear up what was irrelevant, let the medication do what it does, and get around to living a normal life. And I'm very conscious of the fact that there's a connection between the two. The physiological can make you... can drive you nuts, and then you begin to behave and think in ways that aren't productive. Mm-hmm. But then once that medication came on the scene, I was able then to clear up what, you know, my thinking about that. Mm. And I'm productive and live a happy life now. So there's a connection between the body and the mind, I'll tell you.
Richard, thanks for the phone call. What do you think, Shai?
Richard, that's a great story, and I'm so glad that you kept plugging away at talk therapy all those years, and I'm so glad that a medication came along that worked for you and that helped you with your particular symptoms and that you were able to continue then to work through therapy on some of those issues. And I think that your story is the story of many people and could be the story of others who maybe are afraid to reach out. So what a great success that you were able to tell that and share that with others.
All right, let's get Josh in, who wants to talk about men who don't talk about this. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, Evan, how's it going?
Good.
I think it's just, you know, I think, you know, myself, you know, I had an issue, you know, I had a failed suicide attempt when I was 18. You know, it was a high likelihood for it, being a, you know, white male, 18, in the military, away from home. You know, and it wasn't something I ever talked to anyone about. You know, and even up until now, it was probably, I didn't tell anyone that it had happened probably until 5 or 6 years after, you know, and that was one person who only knew for a long time. And even up until probably within the last year, you know, my wife didn't even know, you know, and I shared that with her. And I think it's, you know, it's definitely something that people should not be afraid to talk to. But at the same time, you know, there is a stigma attached to it. Especially from a male perspective.
Well, Josh, just briefly, since I'm going to run out of time soon, has it helped you now that more people are hearing about it? Is it helping you?
I think just not to sound morbid, but what helped me was, you know, I found success in my failure. You know, and I kind of took that and looked at it as, you know, I must have some type of reason to have not succeeded. So, you know, I actually never sought any treatment or anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, thanks, Josh. Thanks for the call. And I'm glad you got that call in before the end of the hour, Shai, because when we talk about the rate of suicide in the military and attempted suicide, it is staggering and very frightening right now.
Yeah, it's definitely higher than that of the civilian population. For those of you who are in the military, I want you to know that there's the National Veterans Crisis Line. If you call that same number I said before, 1-800-273-TALK, and choose the option to press 1, it takes you straight to the National Veterans Crisis Line, full of wonderful, caring people who are there to help.
I hope everyone just heard Josh's call and hears an important message in it, too. It's a great way to end the hour because we're leaving this hour with a determination that we are going to listen and that we're willing to talk a little bit more, even when it doesn't seem easy. Shia Lewis is 211 Lifeline Community Engagement Manager. That's a program of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. They're doing such important work. If you see someone with a semicolon tattoo or a Facebook profile picture of a semicolon or something like that, that's what we're talking about. A semicolon has become a symbol for people who are moving forward with their lives, determined not to put a period of suicide. But there's more to say and there's more to it. And that has been the impetus for an important conversation this hour. Shai, thank you so much. And I'm sure there's much more to say. So we'll have you back, I'm sure, very soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
211, that's Shai Lewis. Short break and more Education Friday next.